Welcome to Music Fishbowl.
Hello everyone, welcome back to Music Fishbowl, music chatter for all. It's Dan here, and I have to say, today we have got an incredibly good music chat episode for you today. It was a great conversation that I had with my guest. He was fantastic, and I can't wait to show you it. Bit of housekeeping before, if you would like to be a guest on the podcast, do let me know. At thisisvinyl.tap is my Instagram. Just drop me a message on there, or send me an email, musicfishbowl123@gmail.com. Both of them in the description below. If you missed it, don't rewind. Just go down there. You can see them easy. Thank you to everyone who has been listening so far as well. As always, you know I appreciate you so much and your time and everything. The nice words you say is incredible. I actually can't believe that you are so lovely to me. So thank you so much. You make it all worthwhile. I don't do this for money. It is a hobby. It's just for free. To give something to the music industry by giving free promotion and things like that to accounts and artists and all sorts of things, or just bringing people joy just by having a conversation with somebody as well. It just means a lot that you're there and you say all the nice things you do. So thank you so much for that. I am on TikTok, and I want to mention this again because I did last week as well. It's at thisisvinyl.tap again. I do a bit more long form content on there, sort of mini video essays and reviews. Check it out. It takes a bit more time to make the stuff on there as well. So do let me know if you like it or not. Drop me a follow, please, if you can. I really appreciate it if you would. But today, let's move on to the guest. I had Brandon on. Brandon is a vinyl record collector, just like myself, and he has got an Instagram account, which is @Brandos_record_collection. It's @Brandos_record_collection. Brandos is spelled Brandos. He started his account at a similar time to me, about a year and a bit ago, and we're both one of each other's early follows. So we've sort of grown through Instagram on vinyl, the vinyl Instagram community together, and it was really great to have him on. I've been very much aware of what he does on Instagram and really liked his content for a long time, so I'm really glad that he came on. And you know what, he was brilliant as a guest. Great conversation, talking a lot about actual record collecting, differences between the UK and the US in that as well, and also just having a general music conversation and talking about metal music quite a bit as well, which is something I don't do so much on the podcast. So if you're into metal, you're going to really enjoy this one as well. I'm just going to play the conversation because it was so good. It is a longer one, so for those of you who do like longer episodes, this one's definitely for you. If you don't, feel free to pause and come back. Here's my conversation with Brandon. It was fantastic. Enjoy. Hello everyone, welcome back to the main section of today's podcast. I am here with Brandon. Brandon is a fellow vinyl community Instagram personality. He's got his account @Brandos_record_collection. And I'd like to welcome him to the podcast. Hello, Brandon.
Hello, thank you for welcoming me.
No, it's not a problem at all. Today's just going to be a nice casual music conversation, which I know my audience really does like listening to. It's the kind of episode they can put on and they don't have to concentrate because it's so easy for them to listen to, basically, because it's everything that they love hearing. So I'm really looking forward to getting into it with you. So as I mentioned, you've got a vinyl-based Instagram account online. I've actually been a follower of you pretty much since I started mine about a year and a bit ago now, because I've only been on there for a little while. Exactly. Your account is a great account. We probably followed each other just because we're both new, to be honest. But can you explain what is predominantly in your record collection, just to give people an idea of your account?
So pretty much what I post on my on my account is just records, usually. I think there's about 100 posts of records on there because I keep track of the numbers. And then also I have CDs and cassettes on there as well as some 45s and some other odd stuff, maybe some box sets I put on there sometimes. But then on my story, I also post polls for like album mashups. Like I'll put two albums together and have people vote on which ones they prefer. Usually they're from the same genre or they're from the same year or just similar bands in general, something like that. And then just general music recommendations on my story as well.
Yeah, so I mean, it is a bit of everything for you, and that's what I've noticed since I've been following you. I think I can guess what genre is mostly on there, but do you want to let the audience know? Because it's not just this genre, but you do branch out, but there is a predominant genre that's on your collection, isn't there?
Yeah. So I would say that my record collection is generally rock or metal. But then there's also like smaller genres that I get into. It mostly came from my parents because they were both, they never played like modern music when I was a kid. They kind of just played in the car, whatever they listened to when they were younger. So I grew up listening to like 80s rock and metal with my dad. And then with my mom, she was more of the older soul with, she likes like 70s soft rock and things like that. So my music taste is kind of all over the place. But it's mostly music from, I would say, 60s all the way to the 90s. And then maybe some newer like metal bands or some newer rock bands that I like to listen to nowadays as well.
Yeah, I mean I admire yourself for having such a wide taste and having things here, then everywhere, because I think that creates open-mindedness when it comes to listening to music. Would you agree?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's the best way to be, because it just means if you hear something new, you're not going to go, no, it's new, don't like it, you know, which a lot of people do. They do that. So can I ask them, when did you start? Because you only started your account similar time to I did, about a year and a bit ago. So obviously I've been collecting records since 2011. So I've been doing it quite a while. When did you start collecting?
Let's see. It was when I was in high school, I think. I had a hard time passing my my driver's test when I was in high school. So my mom made it like a incentive to pass my driver's test. She would buy me my first record player.
Oh,
so
yeah.
I think that was around when I must have been when I was either 16 or 17, which was around probably 2017 or 2018, I think. So maybe 5 or 6 years ago.
Yeah.
And I got a little tiny record player that had, it was one of those, it wasn't like a Crosley Cruiser, like one of those briefcase ones, but it was one that you could pack up in a shell and take with you anywhere.
Oh, okay.
And it had like batteries and everything. It wasn't super great. I have a proper turntable now, but
did the job for the time.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah. So what equipment have you got now then?
Let me take a look. So I have an old Technics turntable that I got from a colleague that I believe is either from the late 80s or 90s. It's an SLB2. It's got like the dust cover and everything. And then I had to replace the needle and the head shell because it was the original needle it came with. And they don't make those needles anymore.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the shell that it came with doesn't correlate with modern cartridges and needles, so I couldn't put a new one on, so I had to buy a whole new head shell and everything and screw it on.
Yeah,
everything else on it's original pretty much.
I mean, it's funny, do you find because this is something that I'm interested in, because I started off with my uncle's turntable that he bought in the 80s, and it was an all-in-one system. So it's a massive thing. It's a stacked-up thing.
Oh, you're right, right.
Sony had CD, which is rare for the time, but CD didn't work on it when I got it. A cassette and cassette recorder, radio, and turntable. And then I moved on to having my own system, which was bought for me, which is basically similar, but a modern version of. It was an all-in-one. And then I spent about £700 took a loan out with my parents, so it'd be interest free. I took a loan out with them, and I paid it all back now. But to buy, effectively, I bought an Audio Technica, you've probably seen it on my account, an Audio Technica turntable. I got a Sony amp on their Outlex store, which was really good. So I got that for £200. Funny enough, it's got Bluetooth on it. I didn't think I needed Bluetooth. Oh my word, that is one thing I would never want to get rid of. It's so good having Bluetooth on it. And then I got some Dali speakers to go with it. The one thing I've always thought about though is changing the cartridge holder, the head on the needle, on the arm of the turntable. I've always thought about that. Do you think it makes it sound better or not if I were to get a better quality one, for example?
So with mine, it definitely, it sounded better. Mine's the newer Audio Technica head shell, and also it's the newer cartridge and needle as well.
Yeah.
I noticed a difference. I think it sounded better, but it helped that it was a needle that wasn't worn either.
Yeah, this one,
I ended up having to replace it because I didn't know any better. But the needle got so worn that it wasn't even sticking in the grooves anymore, and it would just slide across the needle because there was no point on it anymore.
Oh, blimey. Okay. Because you get that sometimes with older records. If you're I don't know how much you spend on records, but I'm a budget collector. So even today, I bought Scary Monsters by David Bowie for £5 in my local record shop because the guy had it in his bargain box. So I'm very much, as much as I can be a budget collector, I have paid a lot more, but as much as I can be. With some older records, that just happens anyway because the actual grooves are worn out so bad.
Yeah.
It just slides across. You're like, oh no, now I've got to buy that properly.
Well, so... one of the most interesting records that I bought, because I saw this, there's a show called Pawn Stars, and they had, a guy brought one in on one episode, and it was this thing called a bone record.
I've heard of them, yeah. Tell the audience, because some of them
So they were, during the Soviet Union in, the 60s and maybe the early 70s, maybe even all the way back to the late 50s, Western music was outlawed. You weren't allowed to play it because they only wanted Soviet music and propaganda at the time. Yeah. So these bootleggers would basically go to the dumpsters of hospitals, and they'd pull out discarded X-rays. They'd cut it into roughly the shape of a circle. They're never perfect because they're very crude. They'd take a lit cigarette butt and burn a hole in the middle for the cyclops.
Yeah.
And then they would use I forget what the machine is called, but they would basically use a crude recording of a Western song and just record it into the X-ray, because they're flimsier than vinyl, but they're similar. And usually because they're thinner, they would only have the song on one side. But so it's an X-ray, it's a legitimate X-ray that plays it plays a song on it. I think the one that I have plays Hold Me Tight by the Beatles.
Oh, wow.
And I bought one in college on eBay, and it was from a seller from Kazakhstan who
It's weird, isn't it? Because a lot of them come from around that area, I find.
Yeah.
When you look at them behind, somehow they must have shipped all the way out there eventually at one point. But carry on.
He said it came from his father's uncle was actually one of the guys that made the bootlegs back in the day. So it came almost from the source. If it's true,
that's amazing.
I don't know how much of it's true, but it looks old, and I'm pretty sure it's true because it's a legitimate X-ray. You know, you hold it up to the sun, you can see some Soviet man's broken ribs on it.
Yeah, I mean they're quite interesting. I mean, they're pretty much flexi discs. I don't know if you have flexi discs so much in the US.
Yeah,
you have them a lot. So it's effectively them, but done with an X-ray that they put under light, basically, so they can see it a bit more, project it somewhere effectively. It's funny because when you think of bootleggers from the past, especially more so from the past now than nowadays, if they were found recording at gigs and things, the security could take them outside and would end up beating them up and things like that. You think those guys are taking a risk.
Probably.
I think you find out about these Russian guys doing it, taking a risk back in the Soviet Union, you're like, they're risking their lives. That is their lives, basically. It's incredible, really.
Yeah, it was definitely, it was illegal, definitely. The Soviets banned it. So they cost a little bit of money back then, even though it was just one song. And the funny thing is, these things have horrible quality. They sound terrible. There's pop. There's a massive amount of pops all over the place. And the grooves are so thin, going back to what we were talking about before, that you can only get 10 plays out of them.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, and blimey. Enough,
the one that I have run, I don't know if all of them did this, but the one that I have runs at 78 RPM.
Oh, yeah.
So
yeah.
You have to have a turntable that has 78 RPM. My turntable that I have now only goes 33 and 45 RPM.
Yeah.
But the one that I bought when I was – the first one that my mom bought for me actually had 78 RPM. So I was able to play it on that one. And I just took a video of it.
I'd have to go upstairs to play one of them because I haven't got 78 anymore. Because the one thing I'm so jealous of where you are is that it's extremely, extremely hard – to get old 78s of blues music here.
Oh, okay.
Really hard. It's hard where you are, but it's easier. Here, it didn't make its way here so easily. So, and I don't know how the Stones and Eric Clapton and things got hold of these, because I guess it's because there's so much more. You know, to be honest, we got rock and roll records in the 50s from, that's why the 60s Liverpool scene happened, you know, the Merseybeat scene,
right.
With the Beatles and all that, because they could get the rock and roll records from the US because of the Royal Albert Dock. So all the American sailors coming in could bring them rock and roll records and sell them. They just buy a load and then sell them at an inflated price in the UK. Yeah. That's how they got them. So I imagine the same would happen with the blues. And imagine Clapton, is he from London? I can't think now. Why am I know the Stones are. So
yeah.
Apart from Brian Jones, he's from Cheltenham in Gloucestershire. But Mick Jagger and Keith Richards would have been able to, in Dartford, they would have been able to travel down to the Docklands in London or even in Dartford, to be honest, travel towards the coast and meet American sailors to pick up these records. So they might have got them that way, but you just never find it. You never find it. And that is the way to hear like people like Robert Johnson, Blind Willie Johnson, who else? I mean, Blind Willie McTell. These people, that's the way to hit them. It's on 78, right?
Right.
But you just can't find them here. Like, you're so lucky. I actually, something I was thinking about speaking to you about today, actually, was the differences between collecting records in the US and the UK. I've never spoken about it with someone from the US on the podcast, which is weird. But like, I once made an assertion online, and I don't think it's the same now. I think it's still a bit the way, but not really, is that it took so long for coloured vinyl to become a proper thing in the UK, as in we would get the block standard block colours, but we wouldn't get variants with splatters, spirals, splits, and things like that. We didn't get them for a long, long time compared to what I was seeing online with collectors on YouTube, because I at the time I was just watching YouTube channels of people who collected from the US. So I mean
yeah, see, they do with a lot of modern remasters or colored ones now, but it's harder even here to find like older ones, because they've been doing colored vinyl for a very long time, but it just hasn't been as popular until now, because now I feel now that records are kind of coming back, it's more because of the collector value.
Yes,
so they're like, oh, exactly. Let's make all these different variations.
Yeah, I mean, that's how the original 45 started, was colored vinyl. Do you know the story of that?
I've actually seen a couple 45s colored. Those are the ones that I've only seen. I've only seen original colored vinyls in the 45 format.
Yeah, so have I. I tell a lie. I have seen a blue copy of ELO. Out of the blue, I have seen from the 70s. There are some, but they are rare.
I have this copy of Styx. Kilroy Was Here, that was printed. It was printed on a special vinyl, and I forget what it's called. And it's basically, you can't tell if you're not holding it up to light, but if you hold it up to light, it turns to a shade of purple.
Yes, that happened with the Police Synchronicity.
Yes, that's the same. It's the same thing. I forget what the vinyl material they use was called. Yeah,
I don't know what it's called, but that one you hold up and it can come up blue.
But yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I've got a reasonable amount of coloured vinyl. I mean, the predominant amount of my collection is still black vinyl.
Right.
Simply because, A, if you want to buy cheap, you buy used.
Yeah.
And if you want to buy cheap, you buy used black.
Yeah,
because that's what's out there. But obviously, I have spent, you know, I've got the 13th Floor Elevators. I've got that classic psychedelic album on a swirl with all the colours from the album cover and things like that.
Yeah.
You know what really annoys me is when the colour doesn't match the cover. Really annoys me. I don't know why. Do you feel that or not?
Kind of, yeah. I always prefer, I like picture discs over coloured vinyl. Mm,
yeah, I like picture discs as well.
But sometimes the sound quality on picture disc isn't as good, because it's got an extra piece of material on top of it.
Yeah, I mean, original picture discs do just in general sound awful. Let's be honest. I mean, some of them sound okay enough if you've got a good enough system, which both of us do have anyway. If you play it loud enough, it's fine.
Yeah,
but it's when you start playing it quieter, you start noticing it. But the new ones are a lot better. Although I got a hunky dory David Bowie picture disc, that's got some issues. At the quieter parts of the album, it's really got some issues there. You can just hear the like a hissing sound basically because of the paper.
But, yeah, I have I think my oldest picture disc that I have, I don't think it's an official copy. I think it was an unofficial copy, but it's of Iron Maiden's Killers album, and it just doesn't sound as good as the originals. But even some of my newer picture discs just don't sound as good as the actual albums, which is that are just on black vinyl.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, but there's also a thing as well with, I remember when I started collecting, because I started collecting before the boom. So I remember going to charity shops, thrift stores. I remember going to them and being able to pick up for a pound every classic album under the sun. Yeah. Like I got Bat Out of Hell for a pound in there by Meatloaf. I got Waking Up Neighbours, Bryan Adams in one for that. The Kick Inside, Kate Bush. You know, you pick up all these classic albums. Nowadays, all you'll get in them is classical and, like, you know, swing music, but like crooner music, basically, which nobody really wants anymore. But I remember, like, you know, because it was before the boom, I can remember when the new pressing started coming in again. And originally it was pretty much new albums and then represses of classic old albums. That was pretty much it. Yeah. I remember that. And I remember buying, I bought one copy of The Doors' first album and I was like, you might as well bought the CD. Because what they were doing, instead of either remastering for vinyl, because they couldn't get the original masters, they were just putting the MP3s on it. And you're like, no, don't put the MP3 of the album. You've got a master tape that's analog. Use that. Yeah. Don't put the MP3s on it. My word. So it's like, oh.
I think I started collecting like right before the boom, because I remember the place I would use. So I had a record store not too far from my house, but that one ended up closing. So I had to end up going to Walmart to get some. And I'd get, you know, Walmart only sells remastered copies, obviously. But the section of our Walmart, it used to have a huge CD section. And then maybe around 2019, I think, 2018, they dwarfed the CD section, maybe split it to maybe a third or even a quarter of the size of what it was, and just replaced it with vinyl.
Yeah. That's when
the vinyl section used to be super small. And then all of a sudden, this vinyl section is three times the size of the CD section now, which is funny.
Yeah, and we have that here as well. I think you're similar where you are, because I've done a little bit of record hunting in the US. Here we have pretty much we have three types of shops, basically, for music like this, really. We've got used vinyl shops, which might sell some new vinyl just by chance because it's whatever people bring in. Or they managed to get it from a dealer who sold it really cheap and just to get rid of stock and things like that. They'll do that. Right. So, but that's a used vinyl shop. You've then got the new... And many of these were used vinyl shops before, but since the boom, they changed to become just new vinyl, and that's pretty much all they sell. They have a tiny section of used vinyl, and that's it. And usually, that used vinyl section will end up having artists that actually you'd usually pick up in a charity shop somewhere or thrift store. So that it's usually quite bad, but that new vinyl section is pretty good. And then you've got a shop called HMV, which is like a Virgin Megastore type thing. They might have a store in the US or a couple of stores in the US, I don't know, but
yeah, we have one. I can't think of the name of it, but they're like pop culture stores now is where these records end up going, but it's all new stuff.
Yeah, so they've ended up, basically, they just do just new stuff, but they used to be, when I was first collecting, they were fully CD, and now it's equal CD to vinyl there, but they're all overpriced, so the only people who buy from them are gullible teenagers who get started, that's what their market is. They're basically, I find it a bit, not CD, but you know what I mean, it's a bit dishonest that they do that, because they know that that is their market. They're not stupid. They know their market is basically gullible people, and it's like, don't take advantage of people, right, who don't know better. Like, you can always tell people, like, I'll do your research, but not everyone's going to. Like, it just feels a bit dishonest to me, but anyway,
That's me when I first started. when I would go to Walmart and get ones. The Walmart records I always notice, because they're, you know, they're moved during shipping and, you know, they're on shelf. They're always beat up. They always have either even if they're in plastic, they always have scratches or dents on it. even in worse quality. The covers are even in worse quality sometimes than the original ones.
Yeah, and there's a common complaint I've heard about Walmart. I mean, we do have Walmart in the UK. They're just called Asda. They don't do records. It's just they're just a supermarket chain. Supermarkets here, like Walmart, don't sell records at all. They'll sell some CDs, but not many anymore. Right. Sainsbury's were one who did try to. They tried it, mm-hmm. and they had exclusive pressings, and every one of their pressings goes for silly amounts of money now.
Yeah,
but they have, it wasn't viable after that.
Yeah, we have stores that have exclusive copies, like Barnes and Noble and Target.
Yeah, and I'm really jealous of Barnes and Noble. I think Barnes and Noble looks like an incredible store that we just don't have here. Like what they do for like Criterion Collection Blu-rays and things like that. I'm like, oh, it's so nice.
Yeah,
they just don't have them here. Well, I mean, that's our equivalent of HMV, I guess, in some ways. But
well, they were originally a huge bookstore.
Before. Yeah. They look like it when I look online.
Before they started branching out, I think they do like board games and other kinds of activities like that. But now music too, they do.
Yeah. I mean, Walmart is HMV, as far as I'm aware, because it's the only place I've ever seen Walmart exclusive records in the UK is HMV. So I assume they are the distributor, but it's few and far between when you get those pressings come in. Very few and far between. You rarely see them. And I think they might even, I mean, nowadays, for all I know, they might just rebrand them to HMV Records now and just be a reseller for Walmart, potentially. I don't know. But I've never picked one up before because the price is just so overinflated for what it is.
Oh, yeah, like, they're usually like three times the price of an original copy that you find in a flea market.
Yeah. Well, I even look at it like this. I just look at it and go, these exclusives here, I either already have a copy on black vinyl, so why am I going to buy it again? I'm not a double buyer. I don't do that. Even if it's a better pressing or whatever, I just don't double buy unless I'm replacing it with the same pressing because I know there's a fault with my pressing.
Get one copy of each album that I have. Unless I have it on a different, like some, I have a bunch of albums that are on different, what do you call it? Media. So I have, I think I have Whitesnake's 1987 album on vinyl, CD, and cassette.
Yeah, no, I've done that in the past before. I used to collect CDs. I stopped about 3 years ago now. Because the reason being is I got Spotify in late 2020.
Right.
I'd never had it before, and I just decided to go for it, and give it a try, just to see if I liked it, and it didn't help. My old computer crashed, so I lost my iTunes, which basically means that I had nothing to listen to when walking about on my phone. So I decided, and I changed from Apple to Samsung as well because of that. So I got a cheaper phone bill, and I also then got Spotify, and I've never looked back. So I got rid of my CDs. The only ones I kept were from artists that I'd seen live, in like small artists I've seen live, ones that are signed and things like that, that I get signed at the show when I'm there and I buy it at the show. They're the only ones I kept. So now I'm fully vinyl pretty much, and I only buy vinyl, just use streaming otherwise. Like, I first listened to the new Rolling Stones record on streaming through my sound system, and then I've since bought the picture disc with the Barcelona badge. I think in the US you got a one with you might have got the Barcelona one, I don't know, but I think you got a Red Sox one or something, didn't you?
Yeah, it's funny because so the new Rolling Stones album, it's got a crazy amount of variations. I don't know if you have a Discogs.
I do, yeah.
Yeah. If you look on Discogs, there's like 100 different of pressings of it. They do picture discs, or not picture discs, but maybe the cover's different of every single baseball team that we have here in America.
Oh, you got every team.
It's every team, yeah.
Wow, blimey.
So you can get one for whatever team you like. But that's the crazy thing, because now there's like 50 different copies because there's like 50 different baseball. I don't follow baseball, so I don't know how many teams there are.
Well, that,
but I just saw it, and I thought that was a really cool thing they did.
That actually baffles me, because the reason we got the Barcelona Football Club one, which is obviously for Barcelona in Spain, is because Barcelona's shirt sponsor is Spotify. When there's a new massive release by an artist, Spotify will change the shirt sponsor for them for one game to be that artist's logo. So for the Stones, they changed it to the Stones logo. They do it about 3 or 4 times a year.
Right.
And they changed it to the Rolling Stones lips. So the Rolling Stones in return made a picture disc with the Barcelona badge on. So that's the link. Where is the link for those baseball teams? The only reason I really bought that version, because I was thinking about just buying it anyway, and I waited and I put it off, and then that one came up, and that finally pushed me to buy a copy of it. The reason why is just because I collect football records or soccer records.
Right.
Because I love my football. I mean, my team is currently playing right now as we speak, but they're away, so I'm not watching them because I only go to the home games. So because it's too much, can't travel every week. But I collect loads of football records. That's the only reason I bought it, because it was a nice link between them. Like, otherwise I wouldn't have done it. But that just baffles me. I don't know why they've done that. That's weird, but hey ho, we'll take it anyway.
Speaking of interesting English stuff, so I have, I don't know if you're a fan of Monty Python at all.
Yes, I am, yeah.
My grandfather, he lived in Scotland for 14 years before he moved over with my great-grandma. So he grew up with Monty Python in Scotland. And I have a copy of, I forget what it's called. I think it's like Matching Bowtie and Handkerchief, I think is the album.
Yeah, I think it's called that, off the top of my head.
And it's like one of those interesting ones where depending on how you put the record down, it changes the program.
Oh, wow. So it's like that Jack White Lazaretto pressing then, because that does that as well.
It's got two different tracks running through the one side,
and you can
put the record down where it plays. And it's just different Monty Python skits.
That's incredible, actually. And there's several of those albums, by the way, and there are people out there who are a friend of mine collects novelty records. He doesn't go as far as Monty Python. He collects more novelty records from when he was a kid, if that makes sense. So he won't collect any now.
I have a lot of Disney ones because I'm a huge Disney fan.
Yeah.
Interestingly enough, because we were talking about picture discs before, I have a picture disc of the Pinocchio soundtrack and the Snow White soundtrack. Mm. And I was looking at them, and they're not like normal picture discs, because they actually sound quite good. And I think it's because, I don't know how they did it, but it's almost like a clear vinyl.
Oh.
With the picture in the middle, because you can tell, like usually with picture discs nowadays, you can tell the picture disc is on top of the vinyl.
Yeah.
But these ones, it looks like it's almost like it's encased in the vinyl, if that makes sense.
Interesting. That is interesting. I mean, that is really interesting.
I got to post one. I don't think I've ever posted them. I have to post one of them.
Yeah, because that's you know what? That's probably the first time I thought about it, because I always know there's a layer of paper to get through, and that's why they probably don't sound as good. But I never thought about the fact that there could be two ways of doing it, where you press it in the middle, and actually the layer of vinyl is on top. And just it's a clear vinyl. That makes some sense. I wonder if my Star Wars ones are like that then. Because I've got Star Wars soundtracks. So I love Star Wars.
Those are the only copies that I have that are like that. Because usually you can see, if it's a newer picture disc, you can see like around the Cyclops in the middle, you can see the paper kind of coming up a little bit.
Mm. Yeah,
you can tell that it's on top. But
And that's how you tell. So if it's flat there, you can tell that it's made differently.
I think I got those in antique markets, because we have a lot. I'm in Pennsylvania, so we have a lot of antique markets and flea shops.
Yeah.
And I'll usually collect records there, because I usually collect original copies too, because they're cheaper. Yeah. And people, just independent vendors, will just sell them. So there's a ton of different older stuff. Yeah. One thing I do notice, I don't know. So with your 45s out there, the ones we have here massive Cyclops in the middle because of the old 45 players.
Yeah, this is a big difference. Yeah,
your guys, I think, because I have like one or two English copies of 45s. They just have a regular Cyclops in the middle.
Yeah. Yeah, so our ones are smaller. The reason why is because we didn't have so much of a jukebox culture here. We do have we did have jukeboxes back in the day.
Right.
And actually, funny enough, if you actually look at most UK 45s, the middle of them, we call them 7-inch singles here. We don't actually call them 45s even. We call them 7-inch singles even. But most of these singles will have the middle bit around the Cyclops will be raised.
Right.
And that or they'll be it'll be. It will be cut out, but you'll be able to push it out easy. The reason being is they should be quite easy to cut out for jukeboxes, so it's kind of multi-use. But for us here, the majority of 45s were sold to households, so there was no need to do that. But I've got a few that have got the big holes. They're not necessarily US pressings at all, but I have got a few. You just obviously stick the you know, the gap, whatever you call it. The converter, we'll call it that.
Yeah.
I stick that in there. I've got a few of them, all different collectible ones, and then a normal one, which I use just for playing. The collectible ones I just keep for collecting purposes.
It's annoying because sometimes the converter is hard to get into it.
But yeah.
My turntable actually came with one that you can kind of just slide in the middle.
Yeah, the one I...
easier to play.
Yeah, I've got two because I've got one of my old turntable, which I just keep up in the loft a bit. I just keep it up there. But the one I've got now came with a turntable. I just ended up inheriting it by accident because it was inside a box. It was inside an old vintage box I bought to be able to use for records. So I just inherited it by accident. And that's a really good one. I find the easiest way is to put it on first and then just put the record over it. It's the easiest way, I find.
Yeah.
Because I see some people like, some people actually try and put it inside the record, and I'm like, oh god, it looks so awkward. Like,
what you can also do too, just because. So my dad is he's a shop teacher at a high school, and they have 3D printers.
Yeah,
he actually 3D printed me a converter that kind of bends because it's plastic.
But it
works. So if you can't find one anywhere, you can always just if you have
a 3D one custom printer, made.
You can just make a 3D printed.
I've always thought a really interesting one would be, and you're an Iron Maiden fan, so I want to hear your thoughts. I know they might already make these, but to have one of the converters, but on top is a little statue, like a little bust or statue of is Eddie, isn't it, his name?
I always
thought that would be quite a nice idea. Funny enough,
I do have, I think it's Stranger in a Strange Land from the Somewhere in Time album. I think it's the 145 that I have.
Yeah.
But it's a remastered one. It was one that came out a few years ago. It wasn't the original.
Yeah. It's funny, actually, because I've bought a few new 45s, and I always know when they come from an American pressing plant because they've still got the wide hole sometimes.
Yeah.
Sometimes they're still made with the wide hole. And sometimes
Most of my metal records are remasters because it's just so hard to find original copies of them because they just didn't make as many because metal wasn't as popular.
Yeah, we have that problem here in the UK with metal as well. You're looking at your cheapest metal record would be £15, especially old school metal would be £15.
Yeah.
Well, it depends what you call metal. It depends what you call metal because if we're looking at Deep Purple, those kind of bands, Deep Purple, Rainbow, Led Zeppelin, that, you know,
those are usually easier,
if you pay more than £20 for an original Led Zeppelin record, you're almost being ripped off, you're almost being taken the mick out of, basically, because in the UK anyway, because that's so much more common, and you know, they're also so much more desirable. So if you start putting the price up, they're going to sell less of them,
The original Led Zeppelin records are almost harder to find here, and I notice sometimes specific bands, the original records, the prices will kind of fluctuate. For like Led Zeppelin, who's very popular here, their records usually go for a little bit more.
Yeah.
Same thing with like Queen because of the Queen movie that came out.
Yeah.
Rolling Stones ones are getting popular again. Motley Crue albums are popular because of their movie.
Actually, you're bringing up a good point because the artists you're mentioning, a lot of the ones that are from the UK, like for example, the Stones and the Beatles aren't expensive at all here. They're very much reasonably priced. The funny thing I've said to a few people who aren't from the UK because they always go, "Oh, I really want to get a UK pressing of the Beatles," and I go, because they go, "Oh, they cost so much where they are," and I'm like, "I picked up most of mine for less than £5." Like,
you have different versions of the Stones albums and the Beatles albums, I think, right? Like they released US versions and UK versions.
Yeah, so the history of it's pretty much that, funny enough, Capitol is owned by EMI. So EMI did the Beatles, EMI Parlophone. Parlophone, bear in mind, is a budget version, is a budget label of EMI as well.
Right.
So they were on a budget label the whole time, the Beatles, until they went to Apple. And that's when the pressings became the same. But Parlophone used to, they basically, EMI, who owned Parlophone, also owned Capitol. So they made cheap versions of the records and they gave it to an American guy to basically go, do them the way you think. It's a bit like the US office. Ricky Gervais and Stephen Merchant said to them, just do what you think would be good for the American audience, which is why that's so different. And that's the same with the Beatles albums.
Well, it's annoying because the track listing is almost different sometimes too.
Yeah, very different on the Beatles. And the Stones ones are interesting because
the Beatles American records in the UK are not desirable, but they are high priced because they are collectible to those who want them. And there's enough of an audience. The Stones US records over here are very desirable. Which is why they have released them on CD. And also, when you go on Spotify, they're all there because it's so desirable that some of the American track listings are considered superior to the UK, which is the opposite for the Beatles, very much the opposite. So, yeah, we do have different versions. And it's the same for all bands in the 60s that would like them. It's because they didn't realise, I guess... It was still at the time when they thought audiences were so different. Like, they didn't... But also, I guess they were, because the world wasn't as connected. Once the 60s started ending, the world was connecting closer and closer. And, you know, we were starting to see this... Like, in the UK, you wouldn't see a... I think there was a massive gap between when a Hollywood film would come out. Like, it'd already be out in the US for a long time before it got to the UK. Even then. So, like, I remember when there used to be different... different release dates for albums for different countries,
like a year difference,
which just isn't the case now. It happens occasionally, usually because of logistical reasons, though, not because of it's just different places and the world is so large. It's not because of that anymore. Usually there's a very specific reason, but it's a completely different world in regards to that. But yeah, we do have very different pressings. The cheapest I've seen a Beatles American pressing here is £15. That is exceptionally cheap. I didn't buy it. I was stupid.
The American ones usually go for like $5 here because they're just so abundant. And usually...
Yeah. And they're cheaply made as well.
They're from the 60s. They're so old that usually they're all ripped up or moldy.
And they didn't sound good in the first place. Yeah. They didn't even sound good in the first place, those ones. The same with... We get a lot of Odeon Beatles presses over here from Germany. They somehow made their way here. Those ones don't sound very good either, but they've got a couple of pressings which are seen as superior to ours, and they're pretty much the same track listing. So those ones go for a bit of money. Canadian pressings are very pricey in the UK. Beatles, very pricey for Canadian.
I have a couple Canadian pressings of albums. I think a couple of my AC/DC ones are Canadian pressings, but you know, they're our neighbors up north, so they're not super rare in this area.
Yeah, it's like us. We get a lot of French records here, a lot of French light pressings, simply because they're so close. It's funny because obviously we're not going to see the same level of. You'll see more Canadian albums where you are, I'm sure, because there's no water barrier. We have a water barrier. We are an island. So that's a problem, obviously. But people used to go, when holidays abroad first started, people would go on holiday to France more often than not anywhere else because it was the cheapest place to go. So you'd end up getting a lot of records back from there. But usually people go there and go, oh, it's so cheap, or the exchange rate was good, so they go out and buy the things they want out there and bring them home. So you'd usually get a lot of that. Maybe Duty Free might have used to have sold them at one point as well, but I don't know. We have a lot of that. And I've got a few of them in my collection. We get a lot of pressings from, I think it's Taiwan. And the reason we get them, and you probably get more of them where you are, but they're not common records, and they're not expensive here. They demand a lower price because they are, I don't know if they are unofficial or not, I don't know, but they command a low price because they don't sound good, but they're all right. They are good. I've got some Girls by Rolling Stones in it. I've got a couple of albums by Spirit, the psych weird psych rock band with it as well, and they come in these flimsy sleeves which are covered in sort of like they're covered in like the shrink wrap, but that is how they work. You can't take the shrink wrap off because it's just paper underneath. I found out that they're pretty much from US military bases in Taiwan from around the time of the Vietnam War.
That would make sense. I have one that
fascinates me.
It's from a I forget what it says on the side, but it's from a military base. What's interesting is I order like through Discogs. I'll get ones from Japan because the Japanese ones come with those obi strips. That I like. Usually I only get, there's a band called Loudness that I like to listen to. They're like they were a popular 80s, well, they never really had a large popularity in the US. They were only popular in Japan. But they released a couple albums in the US, and then they eventually just stopped doing it. And nowadays, they just release their albums in Japan only.
Yeah.
So the only way I can get a copy is from Japan, because they only release Japanese copies. But it's nice because they come with like the obi strip, and it's like a little extra thing that is cool that comes with the record.
Yeah, I like obi strips. I've got a couple with them, but they're more like synthwave records that do it just because it looks cool.
Yeah.
And it goes with the genre. but yeah, I like them as well. The problem is that Japanese pressing is so expensive though, aren't they?
They're usually like an extra $10 or $20 just because they have that little obi strip on the side.
At least, yeah. Well, apparently they're pressed better as well. Audiophiles love them. As far as I'm aware, audiophiles prefer Japanese CDs to Japanese vinyl, but they still think Japanese vinyl is better than ours, or better than elsewhere anyway. I think the CD is considered to be like the creme de la creme of the CD is the highest fidelity. It is the highest fidelity format. It's just a digital sound, so the human ear doesn't like hearing it as much. But if you want the highest fidelity thing, then CD is the way. And if you're that kind of audiophile who likes the digital sound, then it's the Japanese CD, right? I guess.
Yeah. Well, I usually only, the thing about CDs is the reason why I still collect them is because they pretty much just stopped making vinyls in the early 90s, like pretty much up until the until a couple years ago, pretty much, because everybody's buying CDs now. So any album that was released like after 1992, the copies of vinyls that they have of them that they may have released in other parts of the world, usually in South America, they were still making vinyls. They go for hundreds of dollars.
Yeah.
So it's way out of my budget. So I'll usually just get a CD instead, because that'll be the only way I can listen to the album on a hard media format.
Yeah, exactly. No, it's some of those smaller alt rock bands and things from the 90s just don't have vinyl pressings, even, especially if the band aren't together. But simply because there's no one in the band to say to the label, or if they're independent, there's nobody to say, let's do it. And just put it onto vinyl for people. But it's a band I liked from when I was at high school, were called The Milk. They're a British band. They started off as a sort of ska two-tone type, merged with indie alt rock type thing. It's incredible sound. Then their next two albums afterwards were full on like modern day soul records, so they really changed the sound up. But that first album was never put on vinyl, and that's the one I love. And they've only just put it on vinyl. It's 300 copies. I looked at it the other day. I'm gonna look again, because I'm going to bite the bullet and think of buy it. It's going to cost about £45. It is signed, but it is black vinyl, unfortunately. Yeah. I love a colour, but hey. And they changed the album cover, which is annoying. I'm putting myself off buying it now. but anyway, the album is so good. They've only just released it on vinyl now. That came out in 2012.
Yeah.
And you're sitting there going, but hang on, I was seeing albums in 2013, 14 being pressed onto vinyl. So something must have went horribly wrong for The Milk. During the period of 2012 up until about 20, I think the next album would have been 2016 or something around then, where they just didn't do anything other than either tour or just weren't active as a band, because I only knew them from that one album. That's their most successful album. I think it's the only one that might have even charted. It might not have charted for all I know, but I loved it. But yeah, only just pressed on vinyl for the 10th anniversary.
Well, sometimes with earlier releases by bands, sometimes those albums they were never put on Spotify or a digital format. So the only way you listen to it is if you have a hard copy of a CD or whatever. So like, for example, one of my favorite bands is Quiet Riot.
I love Quiet Riot.
In fact, the first vinyl I ever bought when I was in high school was Metal Health, because it's my favorite album of all time.
Is it?
Yeah. But their first two albums, and these came out in the 70s, actually, because what happened with Quiet Riot is they released two albums in Japan in the 70s. The first one was their self-titled, and then the second one I'm blanking on the name of. And then they kind of disbanded for a few years because their guitarist, Randy Rhoads, actually, he went and played with Ozzy Osbourne.
With Ozzy, he went to Ozzy. Incredible guitarist.
They disbanded and didn't come back until like 5 years later. And then when they came back, they started putting albums internationally. But the first two albums were released in Japan, and pretty much people just forget about them. because they're totally different from the like choir metal Quiet Riot sound. They're like these hard rock, glam rock kind of sounding albums. But you can only get them on CD, like on vinyl or CD. And I think even the first album I have on CD, and I had to buy it. It's an unofficial copy I think I bought online somewhere. But that's the only way you can listen to the album.
Yeah. It's mental to think that, because like you'd think Quiet Riot are a big enough band, you would think someone would be on top of it and see that.
Yeah.
Like, I'm a big fan of this artist called Willie Nile, who's not a very well-known artist at all. I say that, he's got a following. He's got a large following now.
Right.
And he has picked up, but he had a lot of big issues. He started in 1980, and he kind of got branded, after Springsteen, he was branded the new Dylan, after Springsteen was, which kind of held him back a bit, because he's actually more of a mixture of, it is Bruce Springsteen, Bob Dylan, The Clash. Put them all together, and his sound is it. That is it. And he had two albums in the 80s, early 80s, and he fell out with a record company, I think, or something went wrong. I think it was a record company fallout. And he came back in the 90s, did two albums in the 90s, one at the start, one at the end. And then he kind of went away again. And then he came back in 2006 with an album. He's released an album almost every year since, or every couple of years since. And he's just grown. He's had a career at the age of, well, he's older than Springsteen, I think. I think he's about 74, 75, 76, around there. So he's had a career from his, 2006, so we're talking nearly 20 years ago now. So he would have been in his late 50s, early 60s when he started having a career again, which is ridiculous. But yeah, he came back with these albums, and his one album was his third album of his comeback, which is called The Innocent Ones, which is the album that everyone knows is the best. Everyone will say it's his best. It's his opus. It's got his, what people would say is his biggest hit. He's never had a hit, but it's not his most streamed song, because his most streamed song is the one from the 80s, because that's got the widest reach, because that's the one that people remember from their youth, when if they own the album, because that was his original single. But there's one song on the 2010 album, The Innocent Ones, which everyone says is his best song, and it's got a great riff. It goes, nah, nah, nah. Like, it's great. I'm not going to sing anymore, because I can cause problems there. But, you know, it does, it's got a nah, nah type riff. Basically, this album was never on Spotify. And it got to the point when he had, like, over 10,000 monthly listeners plus. It's more than that. I think it's probably around 20 plus, to be honest. But people started kicking up a fuss, because people were like, he's never released it on vinyl. You've only ever released it on CD. And there's like young fans. He hasn't got many, but there's young fans like me who were like, I don't collect CD. I only collect vinyl. I can't hear this album. We need to hear it.
Yeah, there's like a bunch of bands like that that just... There's like holes in their discography.
Yeah. Oh, there's a classic one, I think, is The Move. I think The Move's got quite a few holes. I don't know if you know them. They're a British 60s band. And they I've seen them live, actually. They're not really good. But they basically turned into ELO, if you think of it that way. They became ELO, Electric Light Orchestra. So, you know, it's... Yeah, there's holes in that discography for sure on there, I can tell. There's some quite big bands with holes on there.
Yeah, and the only reason I know about them is because I love reading Wikipedia. When you look up the bands, they always have a page of the band's discography, and they'll list everything. And then all of a sudden you'll look at it and you'll be like, I never heard this album.
Yeah,
and it's not on Spotify, and it was only released on vinyl or CD. I think there's a band called Crocus from Switzerland that their first album was only ever released on vinyl. It's actually never even been put on CD. And so the only way you could listen to it, because they only made like 1,000 copies of the vinyl, so it's impossible to find. Some people uploaded recordings of it to YouTube. But that's the only way you could listen to it, because they never put it on these streaming services or whatever. But there's a couple bands like that. Like, again, Quiet Riot. They lost their popularity in the late 80s, but they were still releasing albums. I think there's an album called Terrified, Down to the Bone, and then there's a couple early 2000s ones they had that just aren't on iTunes or Spotify or anything. And they're really good albums, so it's a shame that they don't put them on there, because they would probably make money off of it. But for whatever reason, I don't know if it's because of the label or they don't think people would listen to it or buy it, but they're just not on there.
So, I mean, I've got a question for you, because you mentioned Quiet Riot. You might know why I'm asking this. You might know why. But, I'm just going to ask you, have you heard of the band Slade?
Yes, good. Because they were the Quiet Riot Claim to Fame was basically riding on the coattails of Slade.
Yeah, come on, feel the noise, basically. Yeah. The reason I asked that is because they are an odd band because they had a big Christmas hit. Mm-hmm. Does that get played where you are? Merry Christmas, Everybody by Slade.
Not really.
No.
So there really isn't a lot of. Even on classic rock stations, Slade doesn't really get played that much.
Well, so this is the thing, because them and bands of that ilk are in a really complicated place as bands. And the reason being is, well, for them, they've got a Christmas hit, which is what keeps them in the conversation in the UK. They'd be forgotten otherwise, I think. Because every year, this is the biggest Christmas song every year. And Noddy Holder, the guy who wrote it, and he's the singer of the band, he basically gets a massive royalty check every year, and that's his wage for the year. And he's open about it, and he'll say how much he earns every year. He'll tell people, he'll tell the media, like, yeah, I earned this much from this song this year. Now, the thing with Slade is that they've got loads of great music, but they're part of... I also found that this is a big difference between the US and the UK, glam rock.
Because... Yeah, it's not... It wasn't...
It's not the same thing. It isn't the same thing. No, because...
Yeah.
I found out what we call, well, we've adopted hair metal as a name. We used to just call it 80s rock. What we call hair metal is often called glam rock in some places where you are. And I'm like, oh,
yeah.
Glam rock is usually a very called, specific thing here.
It's usually called hair metal here.
Yeah.
And I think it's just because it was just more popular here.
Yeah. Yeah.
Same thing with thrash metal. Like a lot of most thrash metal bands like Metallica, Megadeth, Anthrax, they're all American bands.
Yeah.
Whereas heavy metal was more popular in the UK.
Yeah. So we are, by the way, hair metal pressings is another story. They are expensive unless you're Bon Jovi, Def Leppard, or there's a couple others that are cheaper. Van Halen will be another cheaper one. There's a few others that are. I mean, Def Leppard is UK anyway, so they're probably the cheapest to buy. No, Bon Jovi because they're the biggest selling. But the cheapest to buy is Def Leppard because they were British, but
they're usually pretty cheap here. The original copies, unless you get into the late 80s albums,
because they start dying. Yeah, but this is where I spot the difference. It's like because Slade were a glam rock band. Glam rock in the UK was a 70s thing, and it was pop rock basically. It was the most poppiest type of rock out there, to the point when that's why it's not in classic rock conversations or on the radio. None of this stuff is because they were too poppy and commercial to be on there. They haven't got that classic rock sound. They just haven't got it. So it's them. The Sweet were another one. And the Sweet are probably the ones that, like, classic rock people will go, they are the one, because they are probably the closest to a classic rock band.
Yeah.
You got Mark Bolan, as in T-Rex, basically. Mm-hmm. And again, he gets a bit of classic rock play. But other than that, you've got, what other glam rock bands are there? There was Mud. Mud were one with a second song called Tiger Feet, which is a big song. There's a load of these bands around, but they just aren't remembered in the same way because they were poppy and Slade are like that. But Slade, the thing about them is people are now going back to them and realizing how good they were. All their albums have been repressed onto splatter vinyl and put out cheap so people can get hearing it again. And also, another benefit is that Oasis, obviously, probably the biggest UK band other than the Beatles, Rolling Stones, maybe The Who, but there are others. But they, I mean, for a period of time, for people under the age of 40, they're probably the biggest band in the UK. They said, we love Slade. And as soon as they said that, there was a big boom for Slade again. And even still sort of forgotten. But yeah, it's a very different, it's a genre that just doesn't get heard in the US. Or it doesn't get heard here in the UK anymore as much, but people try and group Bowie and Roxy Music into it to keep it alive as well, because those are the bigger acts, and they kind of were glam, but they were more art rock in my opinion, like more arty. Whilst glam was just pure fun and silliness, and that's all it is.
Flashy outfits and everything.
Exactly. Well, if you look at Slade, you'll see the prototype to, you know, Motley Crue, for example, and the way they dress, you know, like you do see that. And sometimes Kiss get thrown in the conversation of British glam rock, even though they're not British, because they were around in the 70s and were popular. And then they became a hair metal band because they kind of stretched both eras.
Hair I always metal think of Alice Cooper too, because Alice Cooper, same thing with Whitesnake too, because Whitesnake started in the, I think in the early 70s, maybe the late 70s.
So here's something for you, because you mentioned Anderson Cooper's kicked something into me, because I remember the hair metal bands were usually influenced by the glam rock bands from the UK, usually. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of where they got the style from. They took it from there. Whilst the Alice Cooper is a good one, because he has an influence in a British artist who's a very small artist. But he was big in his day, and he was kind of on the scene, and a lot of people saw him live, even though he didn't really chart. And it's a guy called Screaming Lord Sutch. And effectively, he come on stage, come out of a coffin, shock rock kind of thing. But we're talking early 60s. So this is like, too early for this. Like, for
I think I actually have heard of him before.
Yeah.
That you mention it.
weird thing about him, and other podcast listeners will know this, because I had my granddad on the podcast once, because I'm just discussing 50s music mm-hmm. with him. He was actually my granddad's best mate at school.
Oh,
so it's funny, because I asked him about it on the podcast. So do you want to tell people about Screaming Lord Sutch? Because you were mates with him at school. And he goes, oh, Dave. I think his name was Dave. Was it David Lord Sutch? I think. Mm-hmm. But he eventually went on to become the Earl of Harrow, which is a borough in London, started a political party called the Monster Raving Loony Party, which is just a joke party. Mm-hmm. But it was David Lord Sutch, wasn't it? I think, yeah. He was kind of the influence of Alice Cooper. So it kind of all comes from the UK in some way. But it's, I guess, definitely, because, like, yes, the glam rock bands lived it up, but the hair metal bands were another level. I think that's USA influence. That is, those guys took it to another level and made themselves celebrities compared to what the guys did before, right?
Like, yeah.
Yeah. Do
you ever see this? There's a movie called Spinal Tap.
Yep, I've seen Spinal Tap. Yeah,
it's pretty much just like a spoof of that.
Yeah, basically,
it's hilarious.
I love Spinal Tap. The funniest thing about, there's quite a few funny bits in Spinal Tap, obviously, because it's comedy. But my favorite bits with the is it a cucumber he's got when he goes through airport security? But it's the shirt he's wearing. And it's mm-hmm. totally a joke that does not translate out of the UK. It is complete British humour. The shirt is already funny as it starts, because he's wearing a Shrewsbury Town t-shirt, which is a small British football team in the fourth division, third or fourth division of UK football. Like, this is a tiny team, and it's just and that's already funny, because it's like, why is he wearing that? Why? But yeah. So before we start wrapping up anyway, because we have already had a fantastic conversation and gone on for a while, I just want to get into a few other bits with you. So a bit more sort of like almost quick fire in a way. So what's the first album you ever bought then? I think you did mention it, didn't you?
Yeah, it was Quiet Riot, Metal Health, an original copy, actually.
Yeah. And what's your favourite record in your collection?
That Bone record's up there, but I don't play it really, because I just kind of use it as a showing piece.
Yeah.
My favorite one. So there's ones that like I've listened to, like my favorite to listen to. Definitely that Quiet Riot one. Mm-hmm. Other ones that I pull out a lot. My original copy of Whitesnake's 1987 album, which I think I mentioned before, just because that's such a great album.
Yeah.
Let's see. I gotta think of other ones, but like while I'm thinking of that, some of my like best looking ones, I think, I have this copy of German band called Accept, and it's their new one of their newer albums, called Rise of Chaos, and it's a splatter one, but it's a blue and red splatter. Other ones that I have are cool. So we were talking about Styx before. Styx has done like a lot of like kind of gimmick releases.
They have
with their records. So I have a copy of Paradise Theater, and I don't know if they did it in the UK, but here in America they did laser etchings on them.
Yep, I've got that one. Yeah
So it doesn't hold up if you play it after a while, but if you hold it up to the light correctly, you can see the band's logo on the album. And that's the only, I think they do that with other albums too, but that's the only one that I have that has the laser etching.
It's quite cool. Common in the UK to get laser etched records, by the way. It's funny, I've actually bought one in the US once, but it's quite a common thing in the UK now, because they're splitting up records to be across double discs. But when there's not quite enough music to fit on the two sides, because people don't really want to get up every three songs,
right?
And they were splitting records. I remember with new pressings, they were splitting records onto two discs, and it was every three songs you had to get up. Whereas now they've made it so that it splits onto three sides, get better sound quality because it's across more vinyl, but they put an extra on the other side as well, which means they can hike the price up again because it's another thing to add to it. But yeah, also, I have a, you know, you don't get up as much.
Yeah, I have a remastered copy of Guns N' Roses' Appetite for Destruction that it's not a particularly long album, so there's no reason to put it on four different sides, but it it's split onto three sides, and on the last side is a laser etching. That doesn't even have any music on it. It's just if you like if you play it, you'll mess up the laser etching.
You'll break your needle basically if you play it. But like but at the same time, I mean, I guess with that, you've got. I like the fact they're splitting it over three sides in some ways, because if that's an analog source that they put it onto, which it should be, if it was a late 80s album, it really should be the analog source. That should easily be available to them. As long as they've done that, you're going to have a lovely sounding record because it's going to have more space to breathe. So I have no problem with them doing it. The problem is that it hikes the price up because it's more vinyl. So at the same time, it's like,
I have a copy of Yes's, I think it's Yes, not Yes. Is it Yes Songs? I think is a lot.
Oh, Yes Songs. Yeah.
And it's this massive recording.
It's so thick, isn't it? The album.
It's like a 2.5 hour album. Yeah. So it's. I think it's either. It might even be on four discs. It's either three or four discs. It's split on, and it comes out in a trifold. So when you unfold the whole thing, it takes up the whole coffee table.
I wish I knew you were a Yes fan, because I love Yes. Have you heard their latest album?
Yes, I have. Oh. Yeah, what's it called? It's the blue out.
It's got blue cover. Blue it's honestly their last two albums. I got the Quest on vinyl because it went cheap in the UK, and it comes with a CD as well of the album.
Right. Weirdly.
But honestly, the last two records are like classic Yes. It's so good, isn't it? It's so good.
I like I like because since we're talking about Yes, I like Asia almost more than Yes.
Oh, really?
Asia. Yeah, because
they're a funny band, because like they got one album which is so popular that it's readily available, whilst the rest of them you have to go hunting for.
They're another one of those bands where there's holes in their discography that just haven't been released digitally.
They
released three or four albums in the 80s, and then they kind of disbanded a little bit, and they came back in the 90s. And one of my favorite album by them is actually one that you can't find anywhere. It's this album called Aqua, and it's got this beautiful album artwork on it of a dolphin in the ocean. But it's like a space scene almost too. And it was with a guy. It wasn't with John Wetton anymore from King Crimson. It was with a guy called John Payne, and he has the most extraordinary voice. And it's such a shame because it's such a good album and he has great vocals on it. And it still has, I think it still has Steve Howe. And it's also got Al Petrelli from Trans-Siberian Orchestra. And Jeff Downs, I think, was still doing keyboards for it. I don't know if they had a different drummer. I don't know if it was Carl Palmer. It might have been someone else. But it's such a good album. And then they released another album after it. I think Aria was the next one. And then Arena. Asia's always released albums with the A name.
And that's but, kind of where it drops off at Aqua on Spotify. I'm looking at it now. It drops off at Aqua as the last one.
Yeah, but if,
then
if
after that, there's nothing until 2010.
Yeah, if you look on their, if you go to the Wikipedia page, though, you'll see all these different, they've released like an extra 10 albums. And they're all just these incredible songs on albums on them. They're beautiful pieces of music. And it's such a shame because like nobody knows about them because they were never, they weren't really popular in the 90s. So they weren't really released widely and they were never really put on vinyl or CD. So it's hard to find them. You can find them on YouTube though, I'm sure. But they're great albums. Yeah.
I think whilst we're on the subject of Yes, we do just have to mention Roger Dean. Because his artwork is so gorgeous. And obviously he did Asia as well. He's done Uriah Heep. He's done loads of bands. And he's still working to this day, still doing the same thing. He's done the latest Yes albums. He even did Ann Wilson's last album as well.
He's one of my favorite album artists. It's funny because I'm a teacher as well. So at school, I have a wallpaper that I put on my board. And it's just a slideshow of his different artworks.
Oh.
So it's a bunch of Yes ones. And then I think he's done a couple things for Uriah Heep. And he was doing Asia's artwork for a while.
If I could, I'd have, honestly, I'd just have some, because all of his artwork outside of the album art is the same stuff.
Right.
So I would have if I could, I'd have a man cave and I'd have at least one or two pieces of his art somewhere. It would be, oh, his art is so good. If someone ever bought me an original Roger Dean, I would just, I'd be forever in that debt. His work is gorgeous.
Just this hand done painting artwork that they've done with just albums back then, because that's how they had to do it. They didn't have Photoshop or anything.
Yeah.
There's another guy. There's a band called Manowar.
I know Manowar. I know
them. And the artist that does the artwork for them is this guy. He passed away, I think, last year. His name's Ken Kelly.
Yeah.
And he also did the artwork for Kiss's Destroyer and Love Gun.
Oh, okay. Yeah,
he did the same thing, but he did all those crazy, like medieval artworks for Manowar.
Yeah,
those albums.
Yeah, he's. I mean, he's. Yeah, that's. I just love it. I love, especially metal albums. Always.
Oh, they always have extravagant covers.
And that's the same with the newest genre that's doing that is things like synthwave. That's the newest thing that's doing it, because they have these extravagant covers and they're all beautifully designed. They might be more electronically designed, but that's still talent to be able to do it. So it's incredible what they can do. Metal albums. I mean, I can't think of what my favorite metal album is. I mean, I love Dio's, you know, I love Dio's
Holy Diver.
Holy Diver. Yeah, I mean, that's so gorgeous. I mean,
I always liked, I can't remember. I think the guy's name is Derek Riggs. He did the stuff for Iron Maiden.
Look, there's one Iron Maiden cover, I can't think what it is, and I can't help but just hate it. I love all of their covers but this one.
Maybe it was X-Factor.
Was it X-Factor? Was it potentially
that's like the one with the realistic Eddie?
It might be.
Or maybe it was Virtual 11.
Yeah,
got, like, I mean, the soccer scene on the side of it. Or it's the one with team.
It's the one with the weird, it's all electronically done. Dance of Death. That's the one.
Oh, yes, that one is one. That's probably my least favorite one, too.
God, that's just, it's awful CGI, basically, isn't it? It's not even good for 2003 when it came out. CGI is awful.
It's always so funny when you see, like, you look at some of these artworks from, like, the early 2000s, and you could tell that CGI was in its infancy, and they were kind of just trying to dabble in it to be cool and edgy.
Yeah, like, I know.
Boston did a... The band Boston did a greatest hits album.
Yeah.
And it's got this horrible CGI on it.
I know.
And it was released in like the early 2000s, and it was just the time period.
Yeah, it's awful. I know the one you're on about, by the way, the CGI. It's awful.
It's like when I look at stuff from when I was a kid, because I was born in 2001, I'm just like, I thought that stuff looked great back then when I was a kid. And now I look back at what we have now and I'm like, oh, it's horrible.
Yeah. I mean, there's whole internet aesthetics around that early 2000s era. And it's like, it's I can see why, good. Because there is a nostalgia, because it's almost so bad it's good because of the nostalgia that you have for it. But it is awful. I mean, I'm trying to think of worse. I mean, people don't like the Born Again album cover by Black Sabbath. I've always quite liked that one.
Yeah.
I
always
like
liked
one.
It too. It was funny. I was listening to it in the car the other day because I have the, I keep all my music on iTunes, and I have the Born Again album, but it's like the remastered one. So it has these bonus tracks. And since Ian Gillan was the singer for that album, they were doing, at one show, they did Smoke on the Water with Black Sabbath. Yeah. And it's this amazing recording of them doing it live, because I've never, you know, never heard Black Sabbath doing Smoke on the Water, but it's pretty good if you want to check that out.
There is a bootleg out there, and it's commonly accepted to be almost a Sabbath official live album. It may well have even been bought the rights by whoever has Sabbath rights.
It's like Live at Last, I think it's called.
Yeah, and it's got Dio on it, one with Dio singing.
Yeah.
So Dio sings the older Sabbath songs. That's quite good.
Because they never really, because I don't think Ozzy ever really did a live album with Black Sabbath. Although
there's
an Ozzy solo album called, what's it called?
It's called
Speak of the Devil. I think it's called Speak of the Devil, and it's Ozzy, and he was just doing Black Sabbath songs, but with his solo band, so with there, like, Rudy Sarzo and everyone.
I think there is one but there's only one live album with him on, potentially.
It might be a newer one. Is it like?
But there is also a newer one, which is a recording from the 90s as well. So I think there's two there, I think. But I might be wrong. I may be well wrong there. But Born Again, by the way, I put a TikTok out about this the other day. I think it's having a major resurgence right now as we speak. I think that album is like getting it. Good
I think
love.
It's a good album.
I think it's I one that people have changed their perspective on.
Yeah. One of the first vinyls I bought too when I was in high school was because I saw this in a store. The album that came after that was it's not really a Black Sabbath album, but it was branded as one for marketing purposes.
It's an IOME solo, isn't it?
Yeah.
Really?
It's the Seventh Star one. Which is such a good album.
Yeah, it's got, I don't mind it at all.
It's got Eric Singer, I think, is the drummer. And he was eventually the drummer for Kiss. And he was also the drummer for Badlands. I can't remember who the singer. I think the singer was maybe, what's his name? Oh, gosh, I can't think of his name. But it's a great album. I like it. And people oftentimes forget about it because they're like, oh, it's not really a Black Sabbath album. And I'm like, you're not wrong. But that doesn't mean it's bad. If you take away the Black Sabbath factor when you're listening to it, it's a really, really good hard rock album from the 80s.
Yes, exactly. And it is good. Yeah, I like that one a lot. I reckon because isn't there rumors about Born Again, or is it official that it's getting a remix? Because the only thing one thing people had a massive problem with was the mixing of the record. But I reckon they're all the 80s ones are going to get reissues, because even going into the 90s, a couple of 90s Sabbath albums that aren't even available on Spotify, another band with gaps, they're not even available there. I reckon they're going to get pressings eventually, because people are coming round to Sabbath without Ozzy more now. Like, I remember when I first got into Sabbath about 10 years ago, around 10 11 years ago, the Dio stuff wasn't even considered to be good. Now we see it as great. Like, that's considered as great stuff.
I almost like Ozzy stuff as much. I almost listened to the other stuff with I think the guy's name is Tony Martin. The guy that came after Dio. His albums are really good. Headless Cross is a really... Yeah. I wish I could find it on vinyl, because that's one of those ones that was released in the late 80s, and they didn't make a lot of vinyl pressings.
Yeah.
But I wish I had it on vinyl, because that's a really good album. I think they wanted to release Forbidden. They wanted to do remasters of that, too, because that's another Tony Martin album. That's, like, what people think is the worst Black Sabbath album.
Yeah, honestly, there's no Black Sabbath album that I sit there and go, this is awful.
That's what I say.
There's a couple, Technical Ecstasy and Never Say Die, those two I'm not a big fan of. I don't mind them, but I think the reason why, I think they're probably better than some of the ones I like more than them. But the problem is, I just know how good those first five Sabbath albums are. Sabotage is pretty decent, but not to the level, but it's within the ilk. The next two just aren't anywhere near that, and that's the problem. But I still think they're probably better than ones I like more.
Yeah.
But I'm just used to better with the full original lineup. I'm just used to better, so I just can't get my head into them in the same way. I'll still listen to them and enjoy them, but
Yeah, I just always have a preference for like 80s production.
Yeah.
Like that whole full of reverb and thing. So I always gravitate towards the Dio stuff. Yeah. Because I'm a huge Dio fan as well. But a lot of that's why I like a lot of the Tony Martin stuff. Mm. But it's like the same thing with most bands. It's why like my favorite Judas Priest album is Turbo. Which a lot of people don't even like Turbo, because they're like, oh, the synthesizers and everything on it, it's horrible, it's not really metal. But I'm like, it sounds so cool though. It's so good. And it was one of the first Judas Priest album I ever listened, the first Judas Priest song I heard on the radio was Turbo Lover. So I was like, I want to listen to the whole album. And then I listened to the whole album, and like the second track is Locked In, and it's got this like 2 minute guitar solo what are their names? KK Downing and Glenn Tipton are just kind of sharing the solos. And it just sounds, it's crazy. But the rest of the album's great too. And it's such a shame because people just knock it off because it's got synthesizers in it.
Yeah, I absolutely adore. I think synthesizers in rock music, the Beatles used a synthesizer in the Mellotron. That is a synthesizer. It's allowed. There's nothing wrong with synthesizers in rock music at all.
Black Sabbath's keyboardist, I forget his name, but they would like hide him behind the curtain during shows.
Yeah, because they didn't want people to see him like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, I mean, The Doors. He has a bass on his keyboard. That is synthesized. It's not a real bass.
Yeah.
Like, why do people not have this thing against rock? Like,
it's one of my favorite ones. Rainbow's second album, Rising, which is another one of those covers that Ken Kelly that did Manowar stuff. He did the Rainbow Rising cover too. The intro to Tarot Woman with the synthesizer solo at the beginning is just incredible to me.
Yeah.
It blew my mind when I heard it for the first time.
Honestly, Rainbow Rising, in my opinion, is probably the best Rainbow album.
Rainbow's one of those bands where I kind of almost prefer, I almost like their 80s synth stuff more, like their later albums, like Bent Out of Shape. And I like, one of my favorite ones is Straight Between the Eyes. I really like that album because what's the guy's name? I can't think of the singer, but it's on the tip of my tongue.
He's really good. I lose touch of who the singers are after Dio when it comes to Rainbow. I just lose touch.
It was the same guy. He did an album with Deep Purple because Ritchie Blackmore. He did an album with Deep Purple called Slaves and Masters.
Okay.
And that's one of my favorite Deep Purple. I actually have it on vinyl because I got it as a present. That's a really great Deep Purple album too, but people forget about it because they're like, oh, it's like just mashed with synthesizer.
I feel sorry for Deep Purple because post that classic, like people don't give the 60s stuff much credit. Then people post their 70s, like past 1975, people stopping giving them much credit.
They're the Perfect Strangers. Their comeback album is just absolutely incredible. It's one of my favorite. Yeah. That's another one I have on vinyl.
Their last album I thought was great, and it's a covers album, but I really enjoyed it.
The newest album they did that wasn't the covers one.
Now What is it called?
The one that came after that, with the space guy on it. I forget the name of it.
Hang on. I will remember
it's really good, and when it came out, it was really good. Whoosh, that's what it
whoosh,
was.
That's it. Yeah. Whoosh, yeah.
It's got a really cool cover on it, but the whole album is really, really good. And I think people they don't like it because Ian Gillan kind of dabbles with what's it called? Auto-tune, but not to like distort his voice because he's a great singer, but he uses it just as an effect.
I think it turns
people off because we're like, oh, he's it's like the same thing with Ozzy Osbourne's new albums. He uses auto-tune, but he uses it as an effect, not to cover up his voice.
That's the thing. It's like it's when Cher does it, everyone's like, oh wow. It's like, I have to say, Ozzy Osbourne, his last two albums, because obviously with his health and things, it's all a bit worrying. You don't want it to end on a bad record. You don't want any, like, these artists getting older. I just want every record to be incredible because, like, you don't want it to end on a down note. You just really don't. And they're all getting older. But Ozzy, I mean, he came out with this solo record in 2020, Ordinary Man.
That was going to be his last album.
Everyone did. Everyone thought that. And then, obviously, he managed to get Sneak Out, Patient Number 9. As an overall album, it's not the better album, in my opinion, but it's got the better songs. It's one of the albums where, like, the individual songs work better. And it still works well as an album, but Ordinary Man just fits everything together nicely. Yeah. But the two of them are just like, well, these are swan songs, so thank you. Like, you want to make, you know, it's great to have whatever album is his last album will be his swan song, and he can keep going as long as he likes. And all artists can do that. But I just for their own sake, I really hope, and I'm not going to hold it against them ever if it's not a good album, and I will never think of the artist as poor, but I know some people are stupid and will. And I don't want that.
I'm just surprised that he still releases music. It's the same thing with Alice Cooper, because like Alice Cooper is in like his, I think it's he's in his 80s now.
It's like getting close. He released an
album in 2023, then he released one in 2021.
Yeah, I did a TikTok about it because it seems to be getting a lot of hate recently, and I was like, hang on, I listened to that when it came out. I thought it was great. What's going on? Yeah.
And he was doing stuff with his other band, Hollywood Vampires, with Joe Perry and Johnny Depp, which is really good too, because he released an album, Rise, in 2019, I think.
They did.
And I thought those ones were really good too. I saw Alice Cooper live. I had the privilege of doing that up at Bethel Woods in New York, which is where they had Woodstock.
Yeah.
And that was incredible. If you've ever not seen Alice Cooper, it's an incredible show what he does. It's so over the top.
Yeah, and he, you know what? He's still physically fit because he every day he plays golf. So he's keeping himself fit. Like for someone of his age, nearly 80, to be playing golf every day, playing a round of golf, and to be that is you are physically fit if you can do that every day. So he's able to just go out on stage and it's a breeze, and he can just do what he does. And I love Alice Cooper. I think he's got. I really liked Welcome to Your Nightmare, the companion piece. I thought that was a fantastic record as well, because I love the original Welcome to Your Nightmare. I think it's so theatrical, and it's not even that heavy. It's just really theatrical.
He's another. One of those guys that kind of did a lot of gimmick releases. Yeah. So like I have a copy of Schools Out and it's in the shape of a desk drawer and I've it opens up like one of those old school desk drawers. And then on the inside, just because juvenile, the record is like wrapped in these pair of panties.
Yeah, I mean that's something where it's probably why he's not as popular over here as he is in the US, because like, but even with the music, like shock rock doesn't do as well here because like the UK public in general, in my opinion, doesn't like a gimmick. It doesn't like gimmicks. It's almost like the UK goes like a gimmick is like, oh, you're just doing that just to make us buy it because it's a gimmick. And it's like cynicism, I think, with a lot of people, like with the general public as a whole. It's all my opinion, by the way. If anyone disagrees with me, fine, you can.
Yeah, but like, I think in America, they like the big grandiose shows and stuff. That's why Kiss is so popular.
Just much more open-minded. Like you're just much more open-minded to that kind of thing. It's like bands like King Gizzard and Lizard Wizard, every album, they've done 23 albums. The fact they've done 23 odd albums plus in... since 2012 or whenever it is, that's a gimmick in and of itself. In fact, they released 5 albums of all good quality in a year, gimmick in and of itself. But every album's got a gimmick. And they're popular in the UK, but elsewhere in the world, they're just massive. And it's like, you know why? Because the UK public's just going, what is this? Why are you like that?
Yeah,
like,
they probably wouldn't
open
like...
Open your mind. Open your mind, people, to it. Come on.
I went and saw this band not too long ago called Gwar. If you know who Gwar is... They're this early 80s metal band, but they wear these crazy costumes and then they're shooting fake blood into the audience and everything. And it's all just a stage show, but it's good music too.
Yeah.
It's very aggressive music. You have to be in the right mood for it. But it's good stuff.
No, I mean, there's certain things that are going to be popular in one place and things that aren't in another. And it does interest me as to what is and what isn't, but... Yeah, it's a massive world of music. I just wish everyone was as open-minded as they could be about it, because there's certain things I'm quite closed-minded about as well. But saying that, I got into Green Day post 20 years old. I wasn't open-minded to them, but then I became open-minded to them. So I am willing to change. That is fine. Like, people can convince me to get into something. There's a few bands, like The Killers are right on my street, but I don't like them. And eventually I assume I'll like The Killers at some point. But at the moment, I just don't. But hey-ho, it just is what it is. Anyway, well, I think we need to wrap up there, because we've gone on for a long time and people are going to love the fact that we have. It's been a great conversation. Honestly, I could talk for hours with you. But thank you so much, Brandon, for coming on.
Thank you for having me.
No, it's not a problem at all. Would you like to tell people where they can find you online, where they can find your account and everything?
I pretty much just have an Instagram account. I used to do stuff on YouTube, but not really anymore. But the Instagram account, what you mentioned before, is just brandos_record_collection. It's just where I post stuff about my collection and other stuff about music that I like, new music that I find, things like that.
Perfect. I mean, if anybody here likes what I do on Instagram, you'll pretty much like what Brandon does. Mm-hmm. In fact, you probably like it more, because he does less promotion for a podcast on there, because I know the promotion's the annoying bit that people skip. So people don't like promotion. It's a known thing. Go follow Brandon. It's brandos_record_collection. We'll wrap up after this anyway, after the recording, so we'll stay on just for a bit. I'd like to say thank you to everyone for listening, and thank you to you, Brandon, for coming on.
Thank you again.
No worries. Cheers.